When talking about Tisha B'Av, one usually discusses the Chum itself, the immediate aftermath. Of course, we had two, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. Bayis Rishon, of course, the absence from the Holy Land was relatively brief. The second Chorban had much more dire and elongated consequences. And so, understandably, our focus is on the second Chorban, and most of the time we discuss ideologically the reasons for the Chorban, why certain things happened and so on, based on the rich description of Chazal in the Maseches Gittin, particularly the various incidents that led up to the Chorban and so forth. In Chorban itself, there were really no surprises, because Chorban was predicted by the Torah. The two Tochochos, one at the end of Sefer Vayikra and Bechokosai, the other one in Parshas Kisovo and Devarim, don't pull any punches. And the Torah very clearly indicates, within the framework of the pattern of Schar V'Onesh, V'Hoyo Im Shemoa Tishmu, V'Hoyo Im Lo Tishma, what is going to happen. And in the Sefer Devarim, the dire predictions are replete of what will happen if the Jewish people will not maintain the spiritual level expected of them in the Holy Land. That theme was repeated constantly and with great eloquence by all the Nevi'im all the way down the line. So Chorban itself is really no real surprise. Of course, the Chachomim in Talmud and Midrash try to delve a little more deeply and to find the roots of Chorban. What were the specific transgressions? What were the failures of the Jewish people in their land that led to these terrible events? We know from Talmud, Bayis Rishon, there is practically unanimity what the problem was. The Jews are accused of transgressing the three so-called cardinal sins of Judaism, Avodah Zorah, Gil Aroyos, Ushvichas Domem, idol worship, adultery, and bloodshed. And as one religious historian very aptly put it, not Cholila V'chas that we assume that all Jews, or even most of the Jews, were transgressors. It's not conceivable that the Jewish people could have survived at all if these averos would have been so terribly prevalent. As a matter of fact, in homicide, in Los Hiltzach, if the majority would be killers, who would be the victims? There wouldn't be enough victims. And he said what it means is that the prevalence of these crimes was enough to create what today we would call a quality of life. Sometimes a certain numbers become quality. When the incidence of a certain transgression is frequent enough to impact the general quality of life, this is what Chazal really meant. The atmosphere and so on was conducive to these three averos, and that was intolerable to go on in Eretz HaKadosh and the Holy Land. When it comes to the Bayis Sheni, the reasons are not that clear cut. We find scattered throughout Shas different reasons. Lama Chorba Yerushalayim, why was the second Chorban, why did it come about? But the one reason which has, I hate to use the term, but become most popular and is assumed to be the root of all the evils is the sinas chinam, undue hatred, the sense of unity, the inability of Jews to get along with each other, and it seemingly the root of it is the Talmudic story, the famous or infamous story of Kamtze Bar Kamtze, when Sinas Chinam led to terrible events and sequences, which ultimately led to the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. So we have this concept of the Sinasanam being the root of home by Shady. What I want to focus on, and what bothers me more in a sense, is the enormous longevity of the aftermath of the Horban. The second Horban initiated a Golus that, it, to some extent, is still going on, more than 19 centuries. Why so long? The people who committed these averas were gone. Now, there were new generations coming up. What did the Jews do in the Golus to make this Golus so elongated and continuous, and not only long, but such dire consequences? Jewish history is written in blood. All the things that happened from the Roman persecutions, and then the Inquisitions, and the Gilstein, and of course the final, the greatest of them all, the Holocaust in the very end. Why all this subsequent to the Golus? As a matter of fact, Yiddishism sometimes say it in humor, and express the pain and the anger. There's an old Yiddish saying, if you want to say something takes a long time, they say, it's as long as the Yiddish Golus. It's as long as the Jewish diaspora. It became a paradigm of longevity, the Golus. Why so long? Of course, the popular answer given why the Yiddish Golus so long, because we didn't really repair our original failure, the Sinas Chinam. And since we were not able to rid ourselves of this Avera, we were destined to stay in the Golus. It's a reasonable response, because after all, if Sinas Chinam is bad enough to drive us out of the land, then it should be bad enough not to let us go back. It's more difficult to take away your Murzik in the land to drive you out than to bring you back in. So if we still have Sinas Chinam, we shouldn't go back. As a little bit of evidence to this is given the famous Ma'amar Chazal. The Chazal say that in every generation where the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, the Jews should consider as if it was Chorav. It was destroyed in their generation. And that is usually interpreted as meaning that we are still Sinas Chinam, and if the Beis HaMikdash would be intact now, it would be destroyed because of our Sinas Chinam. This is why we don't go back. I don't know whether that's the true pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara could be very simply understood, how we existentially experience home. If we get used to the Golus, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara is telling us, don't take it so for granted that you are without the Beis HaMikdash. You should feel as you lived at a time when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence and was destroyed. This is sort of the opposite end of a good happening when we say by the Seder, b'chol dor v'dor chayim odam liros es atzmo k'liyotzem in Mitzrayim, just as we should in every generation experience the Exodus, in every generation we should now experience the home as it would have happened to us. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we have the same guilt. But the fact is, the Golus is there, and it's terribly long, and we suffer immeasurably. There have been other attempts to explain the Golus, why it takes so long, and some of them are positive in a way. There is a Mamar in the Gemara of Rabbi Loza. Rabbi Loza said that the Jews were scattered amongst the Gentiles in order to attract converts, gerim. The Marshal is very quick to amend this because we were never a missionary and we are not out. As a matter of fact, we're supposed to discourage people who want to become gerim. So it's very difficult to believe that Rabbi Loza meant that we really actually went out there to get gerim. But what he means is, the Mashor suggests, to tell them about God. This is, in other words, in the context of Sheva Mitzvah Noach, to have the idea of biblical ethics and morality and the faith among God and so on and so forth. And that is a theme which made its reappearance at different times. The reform movement, particularly in the 19th century, made this its a flagship, so to speak, the mission to the nations. They denied the return. They didn't even want to return to Israel. They thought that this would be progressive, and we have a job to do out there in the world to make the Gentiles better monotheists, so to speak. The theme was picked up in Orthodoxy, of course, with major amendments, by Abshanshin Fall Hirsch, who makes that Ola Goyim theme very predominant in his thinking. And he felt, of course, in his day, we can understand his optimism. He saw in Western culture and the progress that was made in the West a tremendous movement in the right way. And he felt that now we have certainly a wonderful opportunity to impact the Gentiles and to make them better, better monotheists and so on. And this is, you find in Hirsch the roots of a certain level of anti-Zionism, of active Zionism. We wait till God takes us back, but we have a job to do out here, namely be an Ola Goyim and make everybody else better. Unfortunately, fortunately for him, he didn't live to see what happened less than 100 years later. From this very nation that he thought was the beginning of a new civilization, das Volk der Dichter und Denker, the people of the philosophers and the poets, who destroyed a third of our people in Auschwitz and other such places. So it's very questionable whether this task was properly performed by us, and even if it was performed to some extent, was it worth the price, unfortunately, that we had to pay to be amongst the Gentiles? It is a debatable issue. It's a debatable issue. It's interesting that in the Talmud, especially in the Sechel Sanhedrin, when the Gemara deals with Mashiach, and when the Golus will end, you have two concepts. Be'ito achashenu. There is a definite time when the Golus is supposed to end. Then there is achashenu. It could come quicker if we do tshuva. So the Gemara establishes two criteria of the end of the Golus. One is tshuva, which at any time could reverse the trend and bring us back, or be'ito. Now, in its time, means God has a designated time. Now, in Be'ito itself, there is a debate. Seemingly Tanoim, certainly Amoraim voiced their opinion. Some believe that when the time comes, no matter what, we will go back, whether we do tshuva or not. The other opinion, which seems to be more predominant amongst the Rishonim and so on, that there is no geula possible without tshuva, and Hashem will bring on us, upon us, such events that we'll have to do tshuva. I don't know, I'm terrified with this opinion. I don't think what could be any worse than the Holocaust, Cholil v'chas. And I don't think we are at the moment of tshuva Klal Yisrael. I mean, we have a lot about the tshuva and so on, but certainly when we look at the numbers and so on, we are not there. It's a very, very terrifying. Now, either way, I repeat my question. What is the purpose of the longevity? If we are supposed to do tshuva, now, are we in any better position now than we were a couple of centuries ago? Are the Jews better now? First of all, we have that theory of Miskat Nahadoros. The generations get weaker. So if the better generations were not capable to do enough tshuva to take us back, we will have that capacity to take us back. It seems unbelievable. How is that possible? Furthermore, if the tshuva has to be on the sin that brought us into the Golus, which is Sinas Chinam, there is nothing more conducive to Sinas Chinam than the Golus. Look what the Golus did to us. Ashkenaz and Sfard. Ashkenaz has 50 different groups, the German and the Polish. The Sfard has 50 different things. The differences of the source, the difference of opinion, the suspicions of one group and the other, between one Hasidic group and the other Hasidic group. We had more Sinas Chinam created by virtue of the Golas and the dispersion and the multiplicity of Nishors and Minhogim and self-righteousness than we had while we were in one country, at least under one government. It is very difficult to conceive how this Golas would bring us into a better situation. And if tshuva is required, heaven help us, if we can ever come to this. You take numbers now. We don't have statistics 200 years ago. But when you look at Jewry today, when the only place you have Orthodox, observant Jews in double digits is in Israel, and everywhere else we don't make even the double digits. I mean, where are we going in terms of tshuva? All right? And on the other hand, if be'ito means when the time comes, it comes, zuzol shel kumen, what is God waiting for? All right? It's a problem. And this is what really bothers me personally, is not so much the Holman itself, but the consequences which we seem to be mired in, and there's no way to get out of it. Of course, that opens up a whole question about current events. To what extent is that Aschalta de Gula at the beginning, and are we moving into the direction of Gula and so forth? Because we don't know. We don't have Nevi'im and so forth. We hope it is. We hope it is, of course. There was one other point that I would like to mention, but I think may be of significance. And it's very speculative, but when we don't know, we have to speculate. And it's perfectly permissible within the framework of people and the framework of thought to speculate, given our sources, and maybe we can reach out in other directions. Let's take as a paradigm Yetzias Mitzrayim, the exodus of Egypt, the Golas Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, what was the Golas Mitzrayim all about? Does the Golas Mitzrayim fit into the pattern of Sraba Onesh? It was predicted centuries before to Avraham Avinu. Theologically, it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, there is an attempt in the Gemara Nedorim to find that our Golas is a result of Avraham's transgressions. The Rishonim don't stick with it, really, because he asked, "B'moedak Yeroshenu, how do I know we'll get it?" It is inconclusive. Very inconclusive. Besides, it doesn't make theological sense that several centuries later we should get punished for Avraham's sin, and how can God predict that we will be so sinful that we'll have to stay in the Golas? After all, why were we sinful? Because we were in Mitzrayim, and He brought us there in the first place. So what did we need it for? If Yaakov and his family would have stayed in Canaan, maybe we wouldn't have become Menteshar HaTumah like we became in Mitzrayim. So God put us there, then why should He punish us? It's a very, very difficult thing. Various interpretations have been given of the Kabbalah. We had to bring out the Kedusha, whatever was the Mitzrayim, and so on and so forth. A very logical explanation. Attempt an explanation of why Mitzrayim, what Mitzrayim did for us, was given by the Rav Zal, in which he developed a beautiful theory. He developed the theory that in Mitzrayim, the Torah makes innumerable references to Yetzias Mitzrayim, particularly how to deal with a ger, and remember Ki ger me'yisem be'eretz Mitzrayim. You understand the nefesh ha'ger because you're in Mitzrayim. By Matnas Aniyim, the Torah mentions Yetziat Mitzrayim. And he develops the thesis that Mitzrayim was an educational process, centuries. The Kur HaBazel, the iron foundry which took out the dross from us and taught us the Midas HaChesed, which is absolutely essential, is the Ikka in the observance of Torah, in the ideology of Torah. And who knows better than the oppressed, the Eved, who is totally, totally under the boots of his master and subject to his mercy or cruelty, what it means to be a Baal Chesed. And maybe this is something, as a matter of fact, as a sidelight to that, the famous, or you may say the infamous, German philosopher of power, who is often blamed as a forerunner of Nazism, which is really a false accusation, but we can understand why people say that. Nietzsche, who said that the biblical morality is slave morality. Why is it slave morality? Because by demanding chesed, that's the only weapon that the slave has against his master. He has no power, and he knows the master can persecute him, so he tries to make the master feel guilty for being tough on him. So it's slave morality. He said, it's a chazon. We say, according to the Rav, it's a maila. It is slave morality, because only a slave knows what it means to experience chesed and to practice chesed. So, if we accept this thesis, which makes an awful lot of sense, then the Mitzrayim experience was not a punishment for sins, for which we were not guilty under the circumstances, but rather a kuah habazel to form, to shape a Klal Yisrael with the sensitivities that are required for a Torah life. And I was thinking to myself, I'm sure that the Jews, while they were in Mitzrayim, they didn't know that. By Zachum and Esau, they cried out to God and they suffered and they complained. They didn't know why they were there. Later on, the Kabbalah Satorah, it was Niskala, it was revealed what tremendous educational experience it was to be in Mitzrayim. But when they were there, they didn't know. And I was saying to myself, maybe things are happening to us in the long galus, which we don't understand while it's going on. But when Mashiach will come and will create this global world situation, right, we will discover in our hearts and souls, we will discover things, or we will be told by Mashiach. The things that are needed now, don't forget, the B'ez HaMashiach is not only redemption of one people. This is a global event. This is a universal event. All right? And maybe universal in the sense of the whole cosmos will be redeemed in Kabbalistic terms. So we may be acquiring skills and spiritual possibilities that we have acquired over this long galus, just as the Jews acquired what they did in the Mitzrayim. And I would like to sort of, in closing, to back this up with the Chazal famous story at the end of Maseches Makos. At the end of Maseches Makos. And for the sake of brevity, I will not cite the whole Gemara, but just the tamsis, the essence of the stories that the Gemara tells us at the end of Maseches Makos. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Akiva and his friends, the great Tanoim, were walking, and they saw and they heard the hilarity and the jubilation of Rome, all right? And they were crying. And Rabbi Akiva was laughing. So Rabbi Akiva asked him, so they asked Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? So in typical Jewish fashion, Rabbi Akiva answered, why are you crying? Jeez, they said, shouldn't we cry? Here is the we are looking at the Beis HaMikdash, this is horror, all right? And the Sholem are going there, whatever. And the city of Rome is rejoicing, these Sholem, these murderers, and they are so happy. So Rabbi Akiva said, don't worry. He made a kal v'chomer, an a fortiori argument. He says, I'm happy. The reason why I'm laughing is, Madoch, like we say in Gemara Loshon, Kal Vachomer. If these Rishonim are given for whatever good they did in this world, they give them the reward and they're getting all this rejoicing. Kal Vachomer, when we will be redeemed, and some we will also rejoice. And the Gemara stops right then and there. Nothing further. Then the Gemara tells a second story. The second story is something very similar. And at this time, again, they were walking and they were crying and he was laughing. And they asked, my brother was laughing, my brother crying. And they said, we see the Sha'olim again, a little different language, but the idea was the same thing, that Yerushalayim is Chohov and all that, and the Goyim are happy and rejoiceful and shouldn't be crying. This time he gave a slightly different answer. He said, and again, I don't want to elaborate too much, it would take too much time, he quoted a Mama in the Novi, in which Chorban is juxtaposed with redemption, or rather, a nevuah of an earlier Novi seems to be juxtaposed in history to a later event. And again, it's a technical problem here, how to reconcile the pshat. But the bottom line that the Gemara comes out with, the reason why the Tanakh is written in such a way, to show that they are related. So Rabbi Akiva said, and that's approximately the language he uses, before the prophetic vision of the Chorban was fulfilled, I was worried whether the wonderful visions of the future world will be fulfilled. But now that I saw the Chorban is fulfilled, and the Tanakh juxtaposes the Chorban with the future hope of redemption, I'm assured that the Geula will come and we will be happy again. So this time, they responded, Nachameinu, Akiva, Nachameinu. Akiva, you gave us comfort. Why didn't they say it the first time? And why did they say it the second time? Maybe the answer is this. The first story was very simply, you are suffering now, but the Gentiles, the Romans are happy. But Kal v'chomer, if God can give them happiness for whatever little good they did, then certainly some future deity will get happiness also. That's really not a nechomer. It's like telling a person who is cholila sitting shiva for a dear one that he lost, that in a year from now you're going to have a grandchild, you're going to be happy. It doesn't help me now. Now I'm suffering. Why should I be suffering? The second time was a different debate there. Rabbi Akiva uses a text which, according to his interpretation, juxtaposed a novi from the first bias to a novi in the second bias, one predicting Chum, one predicting Yeshua. Why this juxtaposition? So what did Rabbi Akiva answer? He says, until the Chum was mekuyim, was fulfilled, I wasn't sure. But now that the nevuah is fulfilled of A, then I know B is going to come to Gula. What? Rabbi Akiva doubted the veracity of a nevuah, and if he wouldn't have seen that one nevuah is fulfilled, he wouldn't believe in the other nevuah. I mean, what? He needed the raya, evidence that the Novi spoke the truth. I mean, what is the problem? Otherwise, he would have said that the Novi lied because the first line hadn't happened, maybe it'll happen later, whatever. But Rabbi Akiva said something much more deeply. Rabbi Akiva said the reason why the psukim juxtaposed is because the Chorban itself is somehow conducive to the advent of the Geula. In other words, why we are suffering after the Chorban is to prepare us for the Geula later on, which means that now amidst the suffering, we are being worked on to experience the ultimate Geula. So the suffering is part of the Geula process. You can bring adduce as evidence, if you want to, the famous Mama Chazal, which appears in different forms, that on the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Mashiach was born. What does it mean that Mashiach will come to be 2,000 years old? What it means is that the roots of redemption were already activated then. And what are these roots? Our godless experiences and the middos that we develop and the concept that we develop, whatever it is that we don't know yet, is being developed. That's why Rabbi the Chutzir Akiva Nachameinu, Nechamtonu, who comforted us, because he was telling them what you experience now is really part of the Geula process, which eventually will come about as a result of this. And that was already something that they could say Nechamtonu. Because now in our suffering, at least we're reassured that it's not suffering, and maybe a little later we'll get something, but in the suffering itself are the roots of the Geula that will ultimately come, and we will be able to reap the benefits of what we're enduring now. And all we can say and hope is that what is happening now should be the beginning of that. We are suffering from other Yisurim, maybe the Yisurim of Aschal to the Gula, we hope, and maybe soon live to see the Gula Shalema, and then maybe we will be able to understand, just like the Jews after they left Mitzrayim, we will be able to understand why we were so long in this terrible second Golus.